This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. I'm writer-editor Matt Larkin. I'm here with some of my usual cronies. I have senior writer Kenneth Campbell I sitting across from me, drinking a Diet Coke. And we have a special guest with us today. It's the boss man, the big boss man, except the alive version. Too soon. Edward Fraser, our managing editor, is with us today. And he's here to talk some hockey.
How'd you get that Coke, Ken?
I actually took a dollar from your desk and went to the vending machine and got it.
You're a straight-up thief.
No, I asked you for it. You said I could have it.
That's a lie. If I wasn't at my desk, you wouldn't ask. The only reason you asked was because... I sit near to senior editor Brian Costello, and I joke every time I come back with change, and I put said change in my desk. Yep. I said, well, here's more money for Ken.
It's all part of my charm. My unique charm.
He also steals Ryan Kennedy's food all the time, by the way.
See, he doesn't know that.
Oh, shit.
Whoops. Didn't tell everybody.
Whoops, Daisy.
He doesn't even know that.
Loose lips sink ships. Speaking of non-sinking ships... that's my awkward transition
to the
I know, eh?
D-plus segment.
Yeah, D-plus. But you know who's an A-plus? There you go. The Chicago Blackhawks so far, they took down not the Montreal Carey Prices, the Montreal Al Montoyas on Sunday night. And they're, I'd say, the hottest team in the NHL right now. And not that, you know, Chicago Blackhawks good is big news, but I do think even when we were doing our season prediction meeting, we were not really viewing them as a serious threat in the Central Division anymore. Is it time to revise that prediction, and are the Hawks officially back to being the Hawks, the quote-unquote modern-day dynasty version?
Well, I don't think they went anywhere. I don't think they're back, because I don't think they went anywhere. I think this team is a legitimate Stanley Cup contender, and I think any team that has elite talent like this team has is always, always going to be in the mix. And I think it just goes to show you that the key to building a sort of perennial contender in the salary cap is to devote basically all your money to about five or six guys. And the rest of the guys, all the rest of the parts are interchangeable. Now, when the rest of those parts... are guys like, you know, Hartman and Michael Kempney and, you know, and you can, and then you go out and get Artemi Panarin, you know, those are great extra parts. But basically what Stan Bowman has done is he's managed the heck out of the salary cap, in my opinion. The Blackhawks are always up against it. They're always in peril, but they're always good. And it's because he manages the salary cap so well. And I'm convinced that the best way to be a contending team in this league is to get your stars, lock them up, pay them the big money, and then virtually everybody else is interchangeable.
But you gotta, I mean, you're right. Stan Bowman right now is best GM in the league. But you have to be right with those contracts. That's mm-hmm. the problem. If you throw good money at bad and your depth guys don't turn out, it's disastrous.
Right.
And everything's gone right for the Hawks. And I don't disagree with Matt. Like, we weren't really really high on the Hawks this year because we thought, what's their depth going to be like? There was a lot of question marks with mm-hmm. this team. Still around goaltending, I don't know how, but we mm-hmm. continue to... I think when you... It's like the kind of Chris Osgood effect. I mean, Corey Crawford's a better goaltender than Chris Osgood ever was, but he doesn't get the respect because of the talent that's played in front of him. And the Brent Seabrook contract didn't necessarily look great, I didn't think. So it left them... in some trouble, but when you can go out and find guys like Panarin, I mean, a guy who's an upper echelon player, and you get him for a song, mm-hmm. That's kind of the guys that get you over that hump. So yeah, you can lock up all the high-end guys you want, but you need that depth to win as well.
Yeah, absolutely, but I still think, and you're right, you have to be right about those guys, but I just think that it's so important to get that high-end depth. Like, everybody talks about, you know, like I remember this summer, Mark Bergevin was talking about the culture of the Chicago Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. Well, the culture of the Chicago Blackhawks has been created because they win.
Yeah.
And they win. Why do they win? Because they have the best players. You know, like, it's pretty easy. You know, when you can, you know, I mean, and Andrew Shaw is a perfect example of a guy like that. Like, Andrew Shaw was deemed expendable. Dustin Byfuglien was deemed expendable. Andrew Ladd was deemed expendable.
Twice.
You got to make decisions on these guys, and you devote your money to the guys who people pay to come to see, who put up the numbers and get the results.
The one guy who is still surprising, who I thought they'd have a pretty significant fall off and even try to look to move him, is Marian Hossa.
It's crazy. Hossa's a point per game this year.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And I mean, he was so good in the World Cup. And, you know, like, he is a guy, I don't know when he falls off the cliff.
Well, as long as he's playing with Panarin and Anisimov on that second line, if they keep Taves and Kane together up on the top, that's a pretty good top six.
Yeah, that's, Chicago went from a team that looked like they were almost a step behind maybe two or three teams in the Central.
But I
mean, right now, like, with the way the Predators are playing, they've got a couple. St. Louis.
Yeah,
I was never really high on St. Louis. No. St. Louis looked like they just kind of fumbled there, and, you know, especially with what happens with Shattenkirk after the season. I think they might have missed their window.
Lost David Backes. And to me, with Chicago, I think the biggest difference, he cost $1.5 million, and his name is Brian Campbell. The problem with the Hawks last year was all year long they kept trying to shoehorn non-top four defensemen into that top four to fill the void left by Johnny Oduya.
Right.
Trevor Van Riemsdyk, like, he probably had welts on his hips from being forced, shoehorned into that slot so many times. And you saw, especially in the first round against St. Louis, I think Van Riemsdyk was on for 7 goals, scored at even strength. And it just sort of exposed that they didn't have... They had three legit top four defensemen.
They had to try to put him in there because they really liked him, and they liked him the year before in the playoffs when he came in and played. And he had some injury problems, and, you know, he was showing some promise. So you got to give that a shot. And as you're right, it didn't work, and they went out and rectified it with a really short-term contract. And the great thing about when you get this good and you get to be an organization like that, you can get Ryan Campbell.
Success breeds success.
Get Ryan Campbell for a year at 1.5 because Brian Campbell says, hey, I want to go somewhere. I've made a shit ton of money already. Now I'll just go and try and win another cup.
Absolutely. And that's exactly, you know, he's already won there. He wants to go back to a successful environment. And you know you're at least going to be, you can't guarantee yourself a cup at this point. There's just too much parity league-wide. But you can give yourself a hell of a chance by going back to a team like that. And I think that's exactly. And the problem is it makes it difficult for teams that don't have success. You know, you look at an Edmonton starting to turn around now. But it's not just that Edmonton, people don't want to go there because of the city. They don't want to go there because it's a terrible organization.
Well, that and the city was kind of the two things.
It doesn't make it easy.
Yeah.
You know,
But when
you start winning, I mean, I'll tell you, if Edmonton starts winning, you've got Connor McDavid there, they're going to attract
Milan Lucic is proof
He went there to play with Connor McDavid. And
he went there because they gave him a boatload of money.
Ironically, he's not playing with Connor McDavid right now.
No.
He's been struggling lately. They've all been. That whole team's been struggling.
They're But, I mean, that's a team that's going to have dips throughout the year, but they at least seem to finally be
in the hunt. They'll be in the hunt.
You have to be when you've got the best player in the world already on your roster.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of best player in the world, actually, it's a good segue to what I wanted to ask you guys next is, who is your Hart Trophy winner? We're almost, it's crazy how quickly the year is going. We're almost at the quarter point, or at least a fifth of the way through the season. So who is your MVP so far?
I got to go with Carey Price at the moment. You know, he's, what, 10-0?
I think he's 10-0.
You know, it's interesting, eh? Like Michel Therrien coaches Montreal, Carey Price wins the MVP and may win it again this year. And the last goalie to win the MVP, I believe, was Jose Theodore. You know who was coaching Montreal?
Interesting.
Michel Therrien. And maybe that's just because his team's relying on goaltending way too much, which the Canadians do. Because for a while, but like, I think for 5 or 6 games in a row, the Canadians were getting outshot and outshot badly. There were like 3 games where they were getting outshot by like 20 or more shots.
That's right.
So I would have to go with Carey Price at the moment, just because, it's almost like you have to take last year into account now, because like if the Canadians are this good with him, and they're this much of a contender with him, and last year they fell off the face of the earth without him, that just goes to show you how valuable he is.
I couldn't agree more, and if you look under the hood at the analytics, like, the Habs Corsi numbers look like an expansion team. Like, they get absolutely, not only did they get peppered, they also have a horrible time generating shots on the other net. Like, they have both extremes. They look really bad. So if there was an injury to Carey Price, like last year,
they're done.
This team would go in the tank, right? So it really proves it, especially if for those of us who like to honor the award for what it's really supposed to mean by definition, there's nobody more valuable to his team than Carey Price. It's not the best player, even though Price probably is the best player too. But in terms of value to team, I think it's not even close how strong Price's impact is on the Habs.
Yeah, it's actually so much so that it's actually a stupid question to ask.
It kind of is.
It really is. Like, it's because he's so far ahead, and we just wasted time discussing this because there's nobody else really that's even close.
It's Captain Obvious, Aaron.
It really is. Like, it's basically, you know, the 700 other players in the NHL and Carey Price. He's that far ahead of everybody.
Now, should we
But the question is, to me, the interesting part of it is are the can a goalie really carry a team for an entire season in this NHL? Now, I know in the regular season he can, but you know, at some point, is this team a bit of a glass house? Like, are they?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh,
a house of cards, I should say.
Yeah.
Like,
I see a glass house. That's fine.
Glass house. I don't know why anybody would be throwing stones at them. Yeah. But anyways, yeah. That's what worries me about the Canadians.
Yeah.
That I'm still not sold on this.
Well, they're not going to keep playing. If they keep playing the way they're playing, they're not going to be this successful through the whole season. They're going to have a 5-game losing streak. They're going to have games where, you know, they get beat 10-0 by Columbus, you know, like, it's like, yeah, oh, no, they're, yeah, I would be concerned about this team, too, but.
As bad as Tampa's struggled, I still think they're a better team than Montreal. I'd still lay money on Tampa to get into that division than before I would Montreal.
Mm. I think
even
so,
with, I'm not saying Price is going to get injured or anything like that, but it's just simply team depth, and I think that stuff comes back to bite you in the playoffs when games get tighter, and like Tampa's got a Vezina caliber goalie of their own there, so I still like Tampa in that division, and Montreal worries me, as good as they've been. I know they've been number one in the power rankings for basically every week. So
well, actually, last week it was Chicago, and it'll probably be Chicago again because
they beat Montreal.
So.
Yeah, can't take that into account with Montoya. Not that Montoya was bad in that game.
No,
I wanted Price to play. I wanted to see the two best teams in the NHL.
That was a bit of a surprise, but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're very wary in Montreal of exactly what we're talking about.
Yes.
You know, I mean, especially when you've got the cushion they have right now. Like, you can afford to sit Carey out a couple of times and not have to worry about him wearing down and getting injured late in the season.
If he plays more than 60 games this season, that's bad coaching.
And it would stun me. It's interesting, too, to think best goalies in the league so far this year, Carey Price and probably Corey Crawford, and the goalie coaches of those two teams, Stefan Waite and Jimmy Waite.
Wow.
Cool story, bro.
Yeah.
Cool story, bro.
The Waite brothers.
Really? Heaven can wait.
All right, let's move on.
Yes. Wait for it. There's a lot of weight to that discussion.
There's also a new TV show. There's a new TV show with Kevin James called Kevin Can Wait. And who watches it?
I don't know.
I don't think I've never watched it.
Evidently very popular.
Like, does Kevin James watch it?
I never watched his other shows. I did, however, see Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Why?
Because I had children that were young teenagers and they wanted to watch it.
King of Queens, not bad.
It had Frank Costanza on it, Jerry Stiller.
Yeah, and a little Leah Remini action.
To me, she'll always be Stacey Carosi from Saved by the Bell. The season where they're working at that beach resort in the summer. Hopefully, Saved by the Bell fan.
Huge throwback.
Yeah, so someone out there listening, like if Mark Paul Gosselaar is listening, he's going to be like, yes!
I remember that.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Somebody who I don't know if was even born during Saved by the Bell's run is Jake Virtanen. So that just reminds us how young he is, and yet here he is. With multiple years of NHL experience, being yo-yoed back and forth between the NHL and AHL Utica. He got sent down for only 2 games, and he's right back up with the Canucks. We were talking about it earlier at our staff meeting, that it just seems like he's being horribly mismanaged. What do you guys think about the Canucks situation in general and how they're handling a young guy like Virtanen?
Yeah, well, you were bang on with your column in our Prospects Unlimited edition that they're
on sale now.
Might be off sale.
Never mind.
Order it online.
It could be. There's a weird situation with these guys who have outgrown junior, but aren't able to play in the AHL for development. So they end up rushing into the NHL, and then in sometimes like in Virtanen's case, in their second year, end up getting sent down. The Canucks are a bit of a mess, and so they need a guy. They need guys like Virtanen to actually play up to their ability.
And that's why the yo-yoing, because, I mean, they've got a lot of holes to fill in that squad. But, like, what do you do with a kid in that situation? Like, I asked the question this morning, is what's wrong with going back to junior and dominating and getting your confidence? Because a lot of Vertanen, I think it's a confidence thing, you know. And, I mean, it's, a line mates thing, too, in Vancouver. I mean, who the heck do you play with there?
Well, for a while he was playing with Bo Horvat and I think it was Yannick Hansen, or I'm not sure, but he was playing with Bo Horvat for a while, and he did nothing. Like, he's done nothing this year. That guy's done nothing this year. And the problem is, like, you bring him up last year, right? Okay, so he comes up as a 19-year-old. You make him a healthy scratch in 12, 14 games. You send him to the World Juniors. He's terrible in the World Juniors. You bring him back. You play him less than 10 minutes in, like, 15 games last year. And now this year he comes in and... Like, I mean, where's the motivation for this kid? He was handed a job when he was 19 years old. Him and Jared McCann were both handed jobs as 19-year-olds, and look at them now. Jared McCann has been traded and is a fourth liner in Florida, and Jake Vertanen is a fourth liner in Vancouver and going up and down, between the minors and the NHL. That is just a huge, huge, huge mistake in development.
The Red Wings are right. No player has ever suffered from being overdeveloped at the junior level.
Exactly. That's college or in the minors.
Wherever. It doesn't matter.
Like, a little too much seasoning for John Smith.
That's
really
exactly
ruined
him. Like, are you kidding? No. The longer you can put these kids out, I don't think that there's any detriment to sending anyone back to junior. And that was my concern. Like, if you look at a guy like Dylan Strome. Yeah. You know, 6 games, we're what, 15 games into the season now? And he's played 6 games. He's not getting the same sort of development practicing every day in the NHL as he would be playing games in junior.
Yeah.
He should be back in junior right now. That's a failure of the Coyotes to properly develop.
Well, it's a failure. It's a failure when they do those things. I mean, like last year, like when Dylan Larkin came to the Detroit Red Wings and said, I'm ready to sign as a pro. The first thing Ken Holland said to him, he said, okay, fine. We'll sign you, he said, but if you're looking out the window of a bus between Grand Rapids and Rockford in November, remember back to this day, because this was your decision to sign. And at the end of the preseason, Jeff Blashill came to Ken Holland and he said, look, Dylan Larkin has not just been the best rookie we've had in the preseason, he's been the best player we've had in the preseason. I need this kid on the team.
So he earned his way.
And Holland basically told Jeff Blashill the same thing. He said, fine, but if that kid is getting 8 minutes a game, or if I ever look up and I see him sitting up in the press box, he is on the first one-way ticket to Grand Rapids.
Right.
And that's the way it's got to work. And you know, like I've said it a million times, and you just said it, Ed, a guy has never been hurt by being overdeveloped or spending too much time in his development, but there's a whole scrap heap of players out there that have been rushed. Now, the only question is those guys who were rushed, you know, like lots of guys have been rushed and they've turned out to be good players. Joe Thornton was rushed.
Sure.
Joe Thornton was rushed into the NHL.
Vincent LeCavalier, Marc-Andre
Fleury. Hall of Fame. Yeah. You know, so maybe these guys just weren't good enough in the first place. So maybe drafting Jake Vertanen was a bad draft. We don't know. Maybe he's not an NHL player.
The onus isn't entirely
on him. But you're not going to find out unless you give him every chance to develop.
Sure.
And they're not giving him every chance to develop properly.
Right. And the thing with the Canucks to me is, this franchise, to me, is by far the most schizophrenic in the NHL. We've talked about it before, but, you know, you're signing Louis Erickson for $36 million. That sends a message that you're trying to win now. And if you're a win-now team and you have a player like Vertanen, who is AHL eligible now, then why not send him down? The message is so mixed. They're trying to straddle the line. They're trying to be developmental team. And it's like they're trying to run this weird apprenticeship where the, you know, you've got your Sedins, your Louis Eriksons, your Yannick Hansons trying to mentor the young guys and rolling it all into one. It's no wonder the Canucks are struggling. I still fully expect them to be the worst team in the NHL by the time
the
season's up.
They're really slow.
Except for Yannick Hanson.
Yeah, they're really slow. They're not a fast team in a league that's getting faster all the time. And I mean, part of it's not their fault. I'm sure they would, you know, they would have loved to have gotten rid of Dan Hamhuis at the trade deadline last year. They probably couldn't. I'm sure that they would like to tear it all apart and you know, deal with Sedins. The Sedins aren't going anywhere. They got no trade. So they're kind of
stuck
in that one.
But if you're sure they're, if they would like to tear it down and go, but that's not just a decision, because if you'd like to tear it down, you don't sign a guy.
Right, you don't sign
Lou Harris. So there's some lack of direction there.
For
and
sure.
This stinks a little bit of a team that at an organizational level doesn't have everyone pulling in the same direction.
Right.
You know, and I go back to Ben Kuzma, our Vancouver correspondent, and what he wrote in our yearbook, and saying that this team has a goal of making the playoffs. Well, that's not what you want to enter the season as. If your goal is not to win the Stanley Cup, mm-hmm. if your realistic goal is not to win the Stanley Cup, you should be selling off assets and looking at a rebuild.
Especially in a market like Vancouver where you've got fans that, like, see, that's what I never understood in Toronto here, for example. It's like, you know, no, don't tell me that the fans here are demanding this. No. People are smart enough to know that if you tell them, look, we're going to struggle for a couple of years, you know, but there's an end game to all of this. Mm-hmm. There's a method to this, but we're going to struggle for a few years. A knowledgeable fan base is going to understand.
And appreciate
it. And they've done it so far this year.
If you play hard, like in a market like this or Vancouver or, you know, any other Canadian market, if you've got a team that's really struggling, you know, they've got a lot of youth, they've got a lot of marginal players, and you know that there is an end goal to it all, and the team plays hard. Like they play hard, they work hard, they don't win much, but they, you know, they give it their best. You're still going to get a decent fan base and decent interest in the team until you can build it back up.
Absolutely. And it's
like,
not
you've,
like
got, you've got that luxury.
They,
why wouldn't you use it?
They have pieces in place. Their future isn't dark.
No.
You know, they've got some decent pieces.
Yeah, Thatcher Demko,
Oliver Levy,
Brock Besser.
Right there. So I think had that been the approach to this season, because they were a team that was primed to finish 30th in the NHL. I had them pick 30th. Even with the players they picked up and with the Sedins in the lineup. Mm-hmm.
They're going to give it a good run.
They are, yeah.
You know, they're going to give Carolina and Arizona a good run for their money.
But the problem is now is like, how do you justify with what you've done? Because you can't get rid of the Sedins at this point, can you?
That's a great question. And if you're Henrik and Daniel,
they won't go.
The problem is you got two $7 million cap hits. There's no way they're going to accept trades to two different teams. So whatever team's trading for them is like, hey, we got $14 million available.
Yeah.
So the Canucks would have to eat some salary. I don't think it's going to happen this year, but next year, I mean, if you're Henrik and Daniel, you're starting to creep towards 40. Don't you want to take one shot?
That's
or are you going to pull the Chris Phillips or Shane Doan and say, I'm comfy? It's something I've never understood. Like, I'm competitive when it comes to, I don't know, I went axe throwing on the weekend.
Yeah.
I got pretty competitive. I beat my own wife and I showed no mercy. I defeated her in axe throwing, had no mercy. I don't, like, did the Sedins have that competitive fire? And I find it mind-boggling when I see an NHLer who doesn't.
Well, I would just think that it would be good to at least play somewhere else once in your career. But you know what? We're not in these guys' shoes. We don't know. Like, I mean, they have families. They have commitments. They've been there for a long time. And that, you know what? The fact of the matter is they earned the right to stay where they want because they were really good players and they got no trade clauses because they were elite players. So you have to respect their decision to do that.
But this takes me to your Buzz One article. In our latest issue, which actually is on newsstands now, the Money and Power issue, and that one of the sticking points in the next CBA is going to be no trade clauses.
Yeah,
because that's what's handcuffing GMs. Because if they could deal these guys and say, I don't care if you don't want to be split up.
Yeah,
we don't owe you anything.
I mean,
we've got to think of what's best for the club. Thank you for your time.
Yeah.
Here's your money.
Yeah,
off you go.
Well, yeah. The thing is, though. I completely forgot what I was going to say.
I'm going to steal the moment because I had something I was going to say. I'm intercepting this from Ken. I've always found no trades and no movement clauses overrated in that regard.
Well, you can move them.
Well, to me, because if you're a player, and the example I always use is Scott Hartnell when he got traded to Columbus. He had no plans to leave the Flyers, but he said publicly, once he found out, like, it's the minute you're asked to waive it, it's, oh, you don't want me, okay? So you're hoping I'm going to leave?
Yeah.
Am I going to want to stay with the team that is really saying to me, yeah, would you mind leaving, please? I think it's a motivator for a player to leave, you know?
But it wouldn't be the first time that a guy's been approached and asked to waive his no-trade clause and saying no.
Of course.
So, I mean, it still does handcuff a team. Like, I agree. If I was trying to get bought out of the hockey news and get traded to L, you know, as much as I don't want to go work at L, I'll probably take it, because if I'm not wanted here, then, you know. But then again, my wife's tried to buy me out several times, and it hasn't worked out, because I'm pretty happy with where I'm at. So I understand both sides of the coin. But to me, I can see that for sure, is that that's one that GMs and owners are going to fight for.
Well, they're going to try.
Yeah.
I mean, is it the hill they're going to die on?
Well,
I don't know.
I don't know about that, but.
Anyway.
Monday was Hall of Fame night in Toronto, and on the players' side, we saw Eric Lindros, the biggie, go in. We saw Rogie Vachon go in after many, many decades of waiting. Looking ahead to next year, I think we've exhausted the discussion of this year's group, but next year, Teemu Selänne, obviously a lock. The other name, big name, that's going to be eligible is Daniel Alfredson. And that name sticks out to me, because to me, Daniel Alfredson, he's the quintessential Hall of Very Good player.
Yeah.
He never won a major individual award other than the Calder Trophy in his rookie season. He did win Olympic gold. But other than that, never won a Stanley Cup, never won a scoring title, never led the league in goals, never won an MVP. Arguably was never a top five player in the league during any of his seasons.
Never was.
There's
at least three guys I can think of who are eligible to put in ahead of him. McGillney, Recchi, and Anderjoe.
And Theo Fleury.
It's funny. To me, of that group, at least the standard I like to use for myself, my own head, and my own imaginary Hall of Fame, I would only take McGillney from that group. Because,
Mark Recchi
has amazing numbers. He has great volume stats. But was Mark Recchi ever a top 10 player in the league, let alone top 5?
Yeah.
I don't think he was. And I know there's precedent. So, of course, we know according to, you know, when you see a Bernie Federko or a Rogie Vachon in the Hall of Fame.
Or a whole bunch of other guys.
Or Clark Gillies, et cetera. Because of that precedent, I'm sure Daniel Alfredson is going to get in, and you know Matt Sundin got in for similar reasons. But does that make it right?
No.
Personally, I would rather see those guys not.
And I just to clarify, I don't think Recchi's a Hall of Famer, and I think Anderson's a borderline guy. Probably, but if you're borderline, you're not in. And I agree with you completely. McGillney's the only guy. Should be two players next year. Should be McGillney and Selänne. Alfredson to me is not a Hall of Famer. Great player, good guy. But not a Hall of Fame.
Well, see, and you touched on the problem, Matt, is that it's become the Hall of Good, really good. You know, it's more inclusive, and I guess that's okay. But if you don't put Daniel Alfredson in, there's going to be years and years where people are going to say, "But look at this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, and this guy." And I've always maintained that just because you made these mistakes in the past doesn't mean you should keep making them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
But the definition of insanity is.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of guys in the Hall of Fame who shouldn't be in. I think that somewhere along the line it went from being the Hall of great to being the Hall of just really good. And, you know, it's their Hall of Fame. They can do what they want. But, I think you bring down kind of the luster of there being a Hall of Fame if you're going to allow.
I completely agree, yeah. And I think what makes it even more frustrating is the lack of transparency. The fact that you don't get to see any of the results, you don't get to see any of the discussion.
Exactly.
I mean, it's, as you like to say, triple secret society.
Yeah, exactly.
So you don't know what goes on with these discussions. And sometimes, you know, maybe we could be convinced if they peeled back the curtain a little bit and said, well, here was the discussion, here was what we took into account, then we'd have a different perception of understanding why some of these guys get in.
Yeah.
You know, why Vachon, why now? I want to know why.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I can tell you why. Because somebody stood up and made a real impassioned plea for him.
But that's...
And everybody went, wow, yeah, okay. But somebody made the case for him somewhere along the line, because we know he didn't have a good year last year. We know he hasn't had a good year in 30 years.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah. It's strange to me, too, that Rogie Vachon... And sorry, Rogie, we're not trying to pick on you here,
yeah.
But... it bothers me that he could walk up to a restaurant and see Patrick Waugh and Dominic Hasek and Eddie Belfour sitting there and say, hey, fellow Hall of Famers, how's it going? Like, the fact that they're mentioned now in the same breath.
Yeah.
Or Bernie Federko can walk up to Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux and say, hey, Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a weird way to explain it, but that's my deeply scientific system.
You're right. I mean, these guys were really good, and I'm not trying to disparage Rogie Vachon or Bernie Federico. They were good players, but it is the Hall of Fame.
Okay, I'm going to tell you what part of the problem here is, boys. The Hall of Fame has a gala ceremony every year. It's a major, major, major fundraiser for the Hall of Fame, okay? So, what do you do? if there's a year like this year where really there was nobody who deserved to get in. Like, really,
well, Eric Lindros.
No, but he should have already been in.
Oh, right, right.
Eric should have already been in, right? Makarov, I mean, Makarov's an interesting case because he was arguably one of the best players in the world.
Sure.
When he did not play in the NHL. Yes. So Makarov and Eric should have already been in if they were
yep.
truly deemed to be Hall
yeah,
of Famers.
That's true. Yeah.
So who does that leave you, right? You got to put somebody in because you can't have the Hall of Fame gala and not have anybody to induct into the Hall of Fame. And it's a major, major fundraiser for the Hall of Fame. It's a huge, it's their pinnacle event of the year. So they got to have somebody to put in,
that's
you know?
Really
and so, so then you wait until years like this when it's a dry year so you can make up, so you can do the make goods, right?
So are
like
you
the Eric Lindrosses, like the, you know,
it's
and
a
then
good
another
theory.
Year, the Alexander McGillneys or whatever, in a year where it's like, shit, we got nobody, man.
So you're not suggesting in any way that they would push a guy off for a year.
No, we're gonna
need somebody.
I don't think they would.
But you need a marquee guy? So a guy like Lindros who is eligible
6 years.
Six years
eligible,
in?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a long time, but I mean, he was a big name, and especially in this area,
yeah.
being a local guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, is there any way that you're looking and going, okay, not this year, but this coming up year?
No, we're going to need him.
We're
going to
need
him.
Yeah.
It's a soft year in 2016.
We're going to put our Lindros card in 2017, 2016, because we need a marquee name.
Okay, just so everybody knows, I did not say anything about that conspiracy theory.
I'm just
asking
a question.
Okay, I got enough people that hate me,
yeah.
so I didn't say that, okay?
It's very
anyways,
true.
But you, yeah, I mean, hey, I'm a conspiracy theory guy with the best of them, so I'm going to go with that for sure.
Always. And we have a special guest today on the podcast. He is currently the leading scorer in the NHL. He is the number one center on the Winnipeg Jets. Mr. Mark Scheifele. Mark, thanks a lot for doing this.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's interesting, too, because, you know, a lot of people are noticing your huge point total so far, and it looks like this big breakout, but if people were watching you closely, which I was, this dates back to last year. You had 32 points in your last 25 games. It seems to me like it was directly tied to when Brian Little went down with an injury. From your standpoint, did something just suddenly click in the winter last year when you went on that big hot streak, and what do you think it was?
Well, obviously getting more of an opportunity with Brian out obviously helped a lot. Just getting those minutes, getting that power play time, and then once getting that time, you know, you kind of get confident, you start to feel good, be confident in your game, and then I think just with that opportunity and the confidence that I had in my abilities, then that's kind of what took over.
Good. And as a result of that, did you expect something like what's happened this year going into the season? Did you think, okay, you know what? Wait till everyone sees what I'm going to do this year because I'm feeling it now.
Well, you definitely hope so. You never know how a season's going to start. You know, sometimes you get bad bounces, you hit some posts or whatever it is. But I was definitely hoping that it was going to go just like it ended last year. And I worked my hardest in the summer to make sure that happened. And, you know, obviously playing with, you know, some pretty incredible players on my team obviously helps. But, you know, I think the biggest thing is, you know, I worked hard at it. And, my biggest thing is, you know, never let work ethic be an excuse. So I worked my butt off in the summer, you know, in the gym, on the ice, and you know, tried to make sure I had no excuses to not continue what I finished with last year.
And is there a certain type of workout that you introduced that was extra grueling, or the kind that it's like, you know, super painful to do but totally worth it in the end?
Not really. I'm a pretty hard worker in general. You know, I work out with Gary Roberts, and he obviously puts us through the ringer there. But for the most part, it's, you know, it's just, you got to stick with it. You know, not a whole lot of off days. You know, obviously you take some sacrifices. You know, you don't get to go out with your buddies or go up to the cottage or whatever it is. You know, it's more focused on training. But, you know, in my eyes, that's the sacrifice you got to give up to try to be one of the best players in the world.
And what's it like on day one working with Gary Roberts? Because, you know, we all know he has the reputation of being, you know, the ultimate trainer, and everyone works really hard. Is it intimidating when you go face-to-face with him and you meet him for the first time?
The first time, for sure, it was definitely intimidating. He's a pretty intense individual, and he was a smart guy as well. But, you know, now that we've gotten to know each other, now it's definitely a little more friendly, a little more soft-spoken. But if you go out of place, if you go out of line, he'll definitely whip you right back into shape.
It seems like you and Patrick Laine have discovered this, like, beautiful harmony very quickly, and you guys are both having amazing starts to the season. How did that chemistry get forged, and did you see it coming, or is it just one of those things where you click with certain guys?
Yeah, I think so. You know, obviously he's an unbelievable shooter, so, you know, you get the puck in, you know, on his stick in a prime scoring area, you know, he's gonna label it, and he has a good chance to score. So, you know, for the most part, you know, he's an easy guy to play with. You put it on his stick, and he's gonna put it in. So, you know, as a centerman, that makes my job easy, knowing if I get it to my winger, there's a good chance he's gonna score. So, you know, I think that's the biggest thing.
And as a fellow first-round pick, have you sort of been a bit of a mentor for Patrick? Just, you know, what to expect in year one, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I've obviously tried to help as much as I can. You know, he's a pretty smart guy. He's a pretty big deal over in Finland, and you know, obviously went through the pressures of that. You know, whether that being in Finland, being World Cup, World Championships, he's kind of been through it all. I've tried to lend a helping hand. Obviously, the NHL is a different league. It's a tough league to score in, and I try to lend my lend my hand as much as I can.
Good. And speaking of being a pretty big deal, you know, I got to think things are changing for you just because, you know, you look at the top of the score sheet, you're number one. Do you find, is your life changing? Are you getting approached more on the street? Has this year sort of changed things for you in that way?
Not really. It's the same old. Obviously, it's exciting. You get texts from buddies, you know, saying how happy they are for you, and, you know, from family and stuff like that. But, you know, nothing's really changed. It's still the same old stuff. It's the same on my end. You know, it's still early in the season, so, you know, you can't get too far out of yourself. You still gotta work, and you know, we've been winning as of late and getting points, so that's definitely on the top of my list.
And at this stage of your career, I know it's still early, but have you had any just crazy weird fan interactions, like just, you know, sending you weird letters or saying weird stuff to you that kind of jumps out?
Not really. I don't have many weird stories to tell.
Not yet, eh? Okay. And are you a stats guy? Like, do you, when it's this early in the season, do you notice that you're at the top? Do you pay attention to that kind of stuff? Or is it better to just block it out when it's this early?
You definitely see it. You know, I'm a guy that watches a lot of hockey, so you see it. It's not something you focus on a whole lot. It's not like, you know, you go to the score sheet and say, hey, like, who scored? Like, is anyone beating me? For the most part, it's, you know, if you're playing well, you know, you'll create chances and you'll score. And that's the biggest focus. You know, you got to control what you can control and not everything else.
Good. Well, thanks a lot for doing this, Mark. Everyone, that was Mark Scheifele, a man that has made me very happy because he's on my fantasy team and I'm in first place. So there you go. Thanks a lot for doing it, Mark, and I'm sure we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks.
And that's all we have for you this week, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. We did have a bit more for you, a little discussion about the Olympics and whether the insurance was going to come through for the players. We had a great discussion about it, but got to be honest, something happened. That part of the file just magically disappeared. So you can just check Ken Campbell's Twitter feed. Maybe he'll discuss it a bit later, but otherwise, I guess it's gone forever. That great discussion. Hope you enjoyed what you did here, and we'll be back next week. Thanks a lot.